Machmed, pages 192 to 196. Somewhere on the Mediterranean Sea, 2015, 11 days from home. Machmed was in and out of sleep, waking every few seconds when the waves washed over him. Minutes, hours passed, and Machmed dreamed that a boat was coming for them. He could hear its motor over the lapping waves. Machmed jerked awake. He ran a wet, cold hand down his face, trying to focus, and he heard it again, the sound of a motor. He wasn't dreaming, but where was it? The rain had stopped, and it was still dark. He couldn't see the boat, but he could hear it. "Here!" he cried. "Here!" But the sound of the motor still stayed frustratingly, agonizingly far away. If only whoever it was on the boat could see him, Machmed thought. All of his life, he'd practiced being hidden, unnoticed. Now, at last, when he most needed to be seen, he was truly invisible. Machmed cried in exhaustion and misery. He wanted to do it all over again. He wanted to go back and stand up for the boy in the alley in Aleppo who was getting beaten for his bread, to scream and yell and wake the sleeping citizens of Izmir so they could see him and all the other people sleeping in doorways and parks, to tell Bashar al-Assad and his army to go to hell. He wanted to stop being invisible and stand up and fight. But now he would never have a chance to do any of that. It was too late. There was no time. Time? The phone. Machmed still had the phone in his pocket. He pulled it out and pushed the button in through the plastic bag, and the screen with the clock lit like a beacon in the night. Machmed held it over his head and waved it in the dark, screaming and yelling for help. The motor got louder. Machmed wept for joy as a boat emerged from the darkness, a real boat this time, not a dinghy. A speedboat with lights and antennas and blue-white stripes on the side, the colors of the Greek flag. A Greek Coast Guard ship came to save them. In the front of the ship, down on his knees with his hands clasped in thanks, was Mahmed's father. Walid was there too. In the back, under the foil, formal blanket, and soon, Mahmed and his mother were out of the water and wrapped in the foil blankets too. What little body heat they had left reflected back at them. Mahmed's mother was too insensible to speak, so Mahmed told his father how they had given Hannah away rather than see her drown with them. Mahmed's father wept, but pulled Mahmed to him and hugged him. "Hannah's not with us, but she's alive. I know it," his father told him, "because of you, my son." The Greek Coast Guard swept through the choppy Mediterranean the rest of the night, pulling more people out of the water. The Coast Guard finally set Mahmed, his family, and all the other refugees down on the island of Lesbos. It was almost 6 o'clock in the morning, and the sky was beginning to lighten with the dawn. Mahmed wasn't sure, but he thought he and his mother had spent more than 2 hours in the water. When they stepped off the boat, Mahmed's father got down on his hands and knees and kissed the ground and gave thanks to Allah. It was time in the morning for morning prayers anyway, and Machmed joined him. When they were finished, Machmed staggered up the rocky gray shore, squinting the hills that were just beyond the beach, and then he realized they weren't real hills. They were piles and piles of life jackets. There were mountains of them, stretching up and down the coast as far as Machmed could see. The way Aleppo had its piles of rubble, Lesbos had its piles of life jackets, abandoned by the hundreds and thousands of refugees who had come before him, shedding the vests they no longer needed and moving along on the road to somewhere else. There were bodies on the beach, too, people who hadn't survived the sea the night, who hadn't been found by the Coast Guard in time, men mostly, but a few women, too, and a child. Mahmed's mother rushed to the infant, howling Hannah's name. Mahmed hurried after her, horrified, but the child wasn't Hannah. It was someone else's baby daughter, her lungs filled with seawater. Mahmed's mother cried into his shoulder until a Greek man in uniform moved them both away from the body and recorded the infant in a little notebook, tallying the daily dead. Mahmed staggered away, feeling as numb as if they were freezing water again. Mahmed's mother went to all the other refugees who had handed in the night and were still there, asking each of them if they had seen her little Hannah, but none of them had. The boat with Mahmed's little sister in it was gone. It had either reached the island, and passengers had already moved on, or it too had wrecked on the rocks. Mahmed's mother fell to her knees on the rocky ground and wept, and Mahmed's father held her close and let her cry. Mahmed felt gutted. It was all his fault. Hannah might still be with them if he hadn't gotten someone on that boat to take her. Or she might have died during their 2 hours in the water. Either way, they'd lost her. "Mahmed," his father said quietly over the sobbing mother, "check the other bodies and see if they have any shoes that will fit us."